Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain.
Way to go, Stan. Nice shot.
Why, thank you. At the beginning of a year like this, we want to roll up a few victories and a few sunk ships. I'm Stan Hudson.
I'm John Krulinski. We'd like to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we do a lighthearted look at the great issues of creation and evolution and where we came from and where we're going. And it's the beginning of a year. We need to know where we're going.
And we actually, I guess, at the beginning of the year, we need to know where we all started too, Stan.
Well, that's it. And, you know, at the beginning of our program, John, we always play this fun music, the Gilligan's Island theme. And part of your words that are taped in there say things like, Charles Darwin impacted society down to our day.
Yes.
We want to talk about Chucky today, don't we?
Yes, and actually when he took his voyage, why he took his voyage, mm-hmm. a little bit of the history of Charles Darwin himself. And when you start studying the Darwinian history, you discover that Charles wasn't always a scientific blockbuster thinker.
Well, Charles, first of all, just a little bit of a history. Charles was raised in a fairly well-to-do family in England.
Mm-hmm.
His grandfather, he had two grandfathers. We often
forget that.
Many of us have two grandfathers. He had one who was the
we
founder of, we have one, one of them was the founder of the Wedgwood China Manufacturing Company. And everybody knows about Wedgwood, I think, that ever invades a mall or a fancy a department store. Wedgwood China was started by his one grandfather. The other grandfather,
well,
Erasmus.
He was a story.
The other grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, was an evolutionist.
He did not believe in this idea that life was created by a creator in the way that it was described in the Bible.
Now, that's exactly right. And so those thoughts, even though Charles never met his grandfather, it was an age problem there. His grandfather was out of the story by the time Charles came along. Nevertheless, the thinking of his grandfather was known, and the influence was in the family. Now, Charles' father decided that his son, who had a lot of idle time and wasn't clear about a career, decided that his son should go to school. So he put him in college to learn a trade. Guess what that was?
He was going
to
be a preacher.
A preacher!
What do you do with idle time?
He wanted to become a country preacher, and so that was considered to be a proper, proper career for a son. So he began that that study course. However, he didn't quite finish it.
No, things started getting derailed. And at that point, between some tragedies that started to occur in the Charles Darwin household and family life, and just some influences from outside of Charles Darwin, there's probably two books that probably influenced him more than most.
Mm-hmm.
And one was by another Charles, Charles Lyell.
Charles Lyell.
And he had a book called
Principles of Geology. And this Principles of Geology book demonstrated the thinking in the science world at the time Darwin was formulating himself as a young man.
The geological world, especially.
That's right. In general, the skepticism, the rising skepticism in the scientific community over issues we talked about last week about the divorce between science and the church.
And it comes out of the French philosophies. It comes out of the Voltaires, the Rousseaus, the modernism.
Humanism,
actually. And so it starts leaving science and it starts leaving the realm of religion and goes into the realm of just humanities, that's where you get your humanities from. Humanism, which really means without God, without supernaturalism.
Yes.
And it begins to be applied in the various scientific disciplines. And it gets applied quite early by people like Hutton in geology and others.
Yes. So there was this tendency to be more open to other views besides the old scriptural account and the old assumption of God. And this permeated all of Western society during this fairly prosperous time, fairly optimistic time in Western European
thinking.
Early 1800s when there was less less dependency upon God and a kind of a glorification of mankind on the rise in the thinking of the West.
Yeah, especially in those kind of the elite type of system.
In the industrial countries.
Charles also had another influence, too, which also was quite important based on some tragedies that they faced in their family, was the influence of Milton's Paradise Lost. Those were a couple of the books that Charles took when he began his voyage after he dropped out of theology. He had to do something, and so he got on aboard a boat, the HMS Beagle.
Well, Darwin had a hobby that he'd had for since his childhood. He was interested in nature. He was an observer of nature. In particular, if there was an area that he really was fascinated by, it was bugs, and in particular, beetles. And you like to make a comment?
John,
right?
Paul, George, and Ringo.
That's exactly right. Charles was the first Beatles fan. He loved to study and collect beetles and notice the differences and the variations and everything among the beetles. And it probably had as much to do with where he ended up in life as anything. He was a good observer of nature,
yeah,
no question.
No doubt he had good empirical observational skills.
And so when he found out that this boat was heading to this place called the Galapagos Islands and doing actually a world survey and a study, it's sort of a scientific study cruise with students of science on there, he decided that that would be something he'd like to do. And along before he went, he talked with Lyell, Charles Lyell, about some of the challenges that Lyell, a geologist, was facing. He thought, Charles Lyell thought, that the geologic evidence was clear that the world was older than the biblical dating of about 6,000 years.
And that was based on a principle of observation which says, hey, you have this little canyon here carved by this river, and the assumption was the river carved the canyon.
That's
right. And so the deductive thought would then go, well, how long did it take the river to carve the canyon?
How long does it take for it to carry out a bucket full of material? It takes a few days. Okay, multiply that and then you can tell how old the canyon was.
Based on the current processes.
It's called gradualism or uniformitarianism and scientific dating thinking.
And that's where this started. We'll talk about that in a little more detail.
Yeah.
But the point was that Charles went overseas on this boat with this problem in mind.
Yeah.
A tragedy in his home, and he also, I want to touch real quickly on Milton's Paradise.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Because Milton's Paradise is sort of what they call a theodicy. And what is a theodicy? A theodicy is
not a Honda van?
No, that's an odyssey.
Oh, okay.
A theodicy is what you do with what happens to your Honda van when you've had trouble with it. You get a long theodicy with it.
Your prayer life goes up, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the whole idea of a theodicy is it helps try to justify or explain suffering, because what you also have in this world was a world of suffering and a world of pain, and Charles experiencing suffering and loss in his life
and he
family.
Had questions about that. He definitely did.
Always had questions about it. You have to try to decide, if there is a God, how come he allows this or that?
Mm-hmm.
And what was often the common thought of the day was, like by Milton in his Paradise Lost, was to take it and kind of remove God from the problem, saying God is the author of all that's good, but he's not really the author of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you remove God from the equation of the reality of the day. But it's not much of a step from removing God from that equation that God is not the author of suffering, saying that really God doesn't have anything to do with really anything.
Yes,
he just started this world and he kind of let it go.
Like deism.
It'd be actually quite popular with the early founders of our country.
Well, that's right. The ones who wrote the Constitution
were primarily deists.
Deists in their thinking that God started things but then kind of backed off and let nature take over. So Charles Darwin was spoken to by Lyell with these concerns about long age and so forth, and he really actually put it to Charles this way, if I could paraphrase it. He said, I've got the geologic component pretty well down for long age, but we have nothing from the biological world to really support long age. And that kind of question was in Charles's mind.
And that also fits his little bit of a passion for bugs and for nature and for other things. Now, he is going to try to apply those long ages principles of geology to biology.
Yes.
And that's the background that helps lead him down his road toward his hypothesis of evolution.
Well, he lands in the Galapagos Islands, and he does a study of the life forms there. There's a tremendously interesting batch of animals in the Galapagos Islands, and among other things, he notices birds, finches in particular. And as he goes to the different islands and the different corners of those islands, he notices that the finch population varies, in particular in their size and shape, and especially their beaks are different from here and there across the island. There seems to be a little bit of a subspecies thing kind of going on among the finches. And he observed the differences and recorded them. And here's where he took a step a little bit beyond logic.
Oops.
Yeah, kind
Oops.
Of into the deep blue. He said, this is answerable, these variations, by having a common ancestor. That mm-hmm. a great-great-grandpa single finch and great-great-grandma single finch came maybe from the mainland, settled here, had babies, but over time they varied into these different forms. Now that is actually pretty good logic.
That was good logic.
That was, and if he stayed right there,
he'd have been just great. He would have actually fit right into.
Supportable.
He would have actually fit right into what was going to come about in a few years later with the discovery of the microscope, the processes of Mendel's experiments with peas and stuff regarding mm-hmm. mutation and understanding how it went.
He didn't understand that.
Yeah. Had that there, he might have not gone any farther. However,
yes.
Charles then began to make the application of geology
yes.
onto the random changes that occurred.
That's right.
And began to start saying all life must have had
little changes over time. And if you go far enough back, you'll have common ancestors of different animals.
And varying species coming out for various reasons.
And you should go back to simpler life forms or further back in time. Now, let's face it. There seemed to be, from the geologic column, in other words, the crust of the earth, evidence that other animals lived at earlier times. And maybe there was a pattern here that would explain these changes over time. So evolution, he thought about this, he wrote about it, and he produced the Origin of Species document that became the book. He mm-hmm. wrote it in 1844. Now, he didn't publish it right away.
Until 1859.
And he waited for a long time. The reason that he published it in 1859 was that someone else was about ready to publish a very similar kind of proposal in evolution.
He was trying to get there first.
And you know, the rest is history, as they say. Even though he said, even in the book, if anyone could prove to me that there haven't been small changes over time, my theory would fall apart.
And actually, that's the one thing that has come to pass in our day. The sad reality is people still cling to the basic tenet of Darwin's theory as it relates especially to age and time.
Now, we've got to get away from the view of Darwin that he, like the Apostle Paul, was walking on the road minding his own business when suddenly a revelation came over him that he had no thought of before. He actually was influenced by his grandfather and by the culture that he grew up in and the colleges he attended that had very liberal professors and a very open view to other thinking.
And actually forming a hostile view toward theism. Not only do you have the problem, like we talked about last week, of the regular church authority, but you also had state churches and state church mm-hmm. authority and the union of political organizations with their local churches in their country. France was Catholic, German was Lutheran, Britain was Anglican, and all these institutions and their control, you sort of have that sort of animosity as well behind it all.
Well, Charles Darwin died toward the end of the 19th century and had some rather well-to-do friends that were able to get him buried in Westminster Abbey, of all places, in the floor there, as though he were, you know, one of the great church thinkers.
The great saints
of
the age.
As I like to point out to people or make the point of, I say, and that was the last person that came to church in England, because when you go to England now, in the great cathedrals there, you'll find far more tourists than worshippers.
Well, thanks to Charwin, the apostle of Darwinism.
That's right.
We'll tune in again for another Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. If you have comments, questions, or requests for Dr. John or Dr. Stan, you can email them at hudahoe@mindspring.com. That's hudahoe, H-U-D-A-H-O, @mindspring.com. Be sure to listen in next time to Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.